The Word of Mouth podcast from NHPR is made possible with support from you, our subscribers, and from
Heinemann, a provider of resources written by real teachers for real classrooms. Heinemann values teachers as decision makers and students as curious learners. Discover the path to lifelong professional learning at Heinemann.com. Heinemann, dedicated to teachers.
About a mile from downtown North Conway is a house. Overgrown lawn, six bikes parked in the driveway. A house that is currently home to eight college students.
I can answer some questions.
One of them, Fernando, is a little nervous about being interviewed, in part because English is not his first language.
This week I'll turn 21.
Happy birthday!
Thank you.
That's a big one.
Yeah, that's a big one here.
Fernando is from Romania, where the drinking age is only 18. In other words, he's not here to party. He's here to work.
I'm working 10 to 15 hours per day.
Wow.
I work 10 hours at Dunkin', and some days I go to my second job, and I work four or five more.
In case you didn't catch that, Fernando is working at Dunkin' Donuts. Sitting on the sofa a few feet away is Veronica. She's from Moldova and also happens to be working at Dunkin' this summer. Her English is great, but she says communication can still be tricky.
They speak really quick, and you're like, excuse me one more time, and maybe a little bit slower.
Like next this. To Veronica is Susanna. She's from Moldova, too, and wouldn't you know it?
I work at Dunkin' Donuts. Almost all of people from this house work in Dunkin' Donuts.
Okay. Are you here partially for the experience, or are you trying to make money? Like, what's your goal here?
No, I'm here for the experience. After I did some math, I don't think I've remained with any money. Because we don't make a lot here.
This is Word of Mouth.
Your questions answered, your state explored.
I'm Taylor Quimby.
And I'm Jimmy Gutierrez.
And today we are digging into the program that brought this international Dunkin's crew to New Hampshire.
And I hope you're going to explain how it is that guy can work 60 hours a week and wind up not making any money.
Well, that's the plan. So yes, the subject of this show is an international exchange program called Summer Work Travel. And if you live on the coast or in the mountains here in New Hampshire, really any region that relies heavily on seasonal tourism dollars, then you might already know parts of the story.
But for the rest of you, you're going to want to hang on to your hats.
Because this is the tale of a semi-secret economy that chances are you've been brushing up against without ever realizing it.
All right, I'm ready to hear this.
Okay, let's do it. So let's start with the nuts and bolts. Fernando, Veronica, and Susanna. They're what some North Conway locals refer to as J-1s. That's because they're working and living in the United States under the J-1 temporary work visa.
This program dates all the way back to the Fulbright-Hays Act of 1961.
Nathan Arnold is a spokesperson for the Bureau of Educational and Cultural Affairs at the U.S. Department of State.
The J-1 visa is a category of visa that basically used to bring people over here for educational reasons, but also for work reasons as well.
Unlike other work visas, which are run by the Department of Labor, the J-1 is managed by the Department of State. That's because it was created as a kind of educational outreach program, a diplomatic arm of the Cold War.
A means to open up relations with other countries. I mean, the idea was to prevent ever having a World War III.
Well, that's a very noble goal.
Yes, it was a very lofty goal.
In other words, J-1s aren't coming to the U.S. to pick strawberries or hang drywall. The program is designed to spread American values.
What is required on those programs is that you're interacting with Americans, you're improving your English, you're doing jobs where you are really having a cultural exchange as well as a work component that goes along with it. And we found that for a lot of people, this is one of the few opportunities they'll ever have to come to the United States and experience this country and get some of the skills that they need for, you know, a better career.
With that in mind, the J-1 is divided up into a number of categories. Some are academic, some are related to government, but most fall under private industry. There is a category for interns, one for au pairs or live-in nannies, even one for foreign doctors and physicians.
My friend did it last year, so it was pretty much, I saw it through like her Snapchat.
This is Ashton. I met she and her friend Ainsley in June, just before they set out for Sebago Lake in Maine. They were working this summer as part of the J-1 Camp Counselor program.
We grew up watching American movies and watching summer camp movies and going, oh my God, that looks like so much fun, because we have nothing like that.
Like the Parent Trap.
Like the Parent Trap, yeah. We have nothing like that in Australia in terms of camps. So it was like, oh my God, we could relive or live the American dream, like for real.
Fast forward 2 short months and Ashton and Ainsley are already done with camp. Now they can say how that American dream compares to reality.
We both had inter-A's, which are 12-year-olds.
Oh, that's a tough...
12-year-old girls.
That's a tough age.
Yeah. Yeah, they're wanting to do things for the first time, like, you know, go out and talk to boys, talking about, oh, who's going to kiss who, who's going to kiss who, blah, blah, blah. Like, you got to deal with that kind of stuff for the whole 7 weeks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was just, overall, it was a really good experience.
It was a really good experience to have. Like, there's nothing that makes me regret coming over here and doing it. Mm. I'm just really happy that I came here and did it. It just taught me so much. Like, a couple times I sent my mum messaging apologising for how I acted as a 12-year-old girl after being with my kids for too long. I was like, Mum, I'm so sorry.
Okay, so that all sounds like a good time. But the focus of the J-1, this cultural exchange aspect, it raises a tricky question. What is American culture? What exactly, other than language, are we trying to export? For some J-1 categories, like camp counselor, that exposure is sort of built in. You're working with American kids, partaking in a classically American pastime, camp. The problem is most J-1 workers do not have a clear cultural component to their jobs. Of the 330,000 J-1 visas issued last year, about one-third went to a single category, summer work travel. Summer work travel recipients have to be enrolled in higher education, and as the name suggests, they are typically here on summer break. And for the most part, these workers are filling standard, low-wage service jobs. Hospitality, waiting tables, information desk. So how do you gauge whether these workers are having a good cultural exchange? And who is responsible for making sure they get it? The State Department may run the J-1 program, but the bulk of that work is orchestrated by designated sponsor organizations.
You know, really, our main concern boils down to health, safety, and welfare, and that they have an exchange experience while they're here, and that you know, that's well thought out.
Phil Simon is vice president of work exchange programs at a nonprofit based in Portland, Maine, called the Council on International Educational Exchange.
And there's also a lot of, you know, compliance stuff, obviously related to people being here from other countries on this visa.
Sponsor organizations like these make money by charging J-1 visa holders a fee.
It's typically fee for service.
Okay. In return, they help with the paperwork and do regular check-ins with J-1 visa holders to make sure nothing fishy is going on.
So the regulations say that we have to check in with them monthly, which we do.
And they coordinate with all the other players, with employers who are looking for seasonal help, with the State Department to make sure everything is going smoothly, and with overseas recruiters who interview foreign students and let them know which jobs are available.
So maybe it's a company in Bulgaria that sells study abroad in the UK or Australia, Canada, and summer work travel might be one of the programs that they offer.
But as far as ensuring a good cultural experience, well, it's not easy. Even the biggest sponsors, like the one Phil Simon works for, are mostly coordinating with visa holders by phone and email. They're not actually present to watch over the process. So the best they can do is punt the cultural responsibilities to the employer. Heather Herring is a former employee at GeoVisions, a New Hampshire-based sponsor, where she was a coordinator for the J-1 program.
You know, in the end, an employer, their needs are they have jobs to fill, so as they would with any American. Our job as sponsors was to make sure that the employer also understood the cultural exchange portion of the program. And that could include letting a student go from one of their shifts to go to a baseball game that we were sponsoring locally, or providing, you know, these community organizations that they had. Sometimes they provide free food or some sort of contribution to the association. And employers would really get into that. It's like their local, you know, good deed for the day. And, you know, depending on the employer.
So there is your primer on the J-1 visa and summer work travel. When it started, how it works, who runs it. So next up, what does all this look like here in New Hampshire? One Monday afternoon in July, I visited the Omni Mount Washington Hotel. The Omni is big, it's beautiful, and it is far and away the town of Carroll's biggest employer. It supplies hundreds of jobs. But according to State Department records, in 2015, more than 90 of those jobs were occupied by J-1 visa workers. It was raining when I arrived at the hotel. I walked around the parking lot until I came to a small white shed. Inside were two plastic chairs and a broken milk crate, and two young women, smoking cigarettes, dressed all in black.
Okay, I'm Timi from Slovakia, Central Europe. Hi, everyone.
Hi, my name is Bogi from Hungary.
Yeah, I'm working at the housekeeping department, but I'm making overtime at dishwashing or banquets as a server and busser, yeah.
Are you really, like, trying to save as much money as you can?
Yeah, we are making a lot of overtime, so usually, like, 65 hours per week or 60, yeah.
Timmy says she makes $10 per hour, but Bogey is only making $7.25, the federal minimum wage. J-1s here live in hotel housing on-site, single or double rooms, not unlike what you'd find at a college dorm. The room costs them $95 a week, deducted from their paycheck. Meals are $3 a piece.
Yeah, of course, there are quite strict rules. We cannot use, drugs or alcohol. We cannot be late from the work more than 7 minutes. We cannot be really noisy in the night in the dorms. We cannot make parties here.
We can wear only our uniform in front of the guests. We can only smoke here in the smoking area.
Have you had a chance to explore New Hampshire at all, or...?
Not really, because as we mentioned, we've got only usually one day off per week, but we visited North Conway and Littleton, and we went to the mountains over there and the forests, that's all. We don't really have time, so
yeah.
We are here because of the money.
And the work is quite exhaustive physically, so we are most of the time really tired.
The Omni Mount Washington Hotel declined to comment on this story. But they are not the only big employer of J-1s in the Mount Washington Valley. Not by a long shot. For 5 years, the number of J-1 visa recipients coming to New Hampshire has been rising, from about 3,200 in 2013 to 4,100 in 2017. And nearly all of those J-1s are going to the White Mountains region, or the Seacoast, where the tourism industry is biggest. 230 J-1 visa workers were placed in North Conway this past June, compared to 5 in Nashua, the state's second most populous city.
You need servers, you need dishwashers, you need bus people.
This is Janice Crawford, executive director of the Mount Washington Valley Chamber of Commerce.
Housekeeping, perhaps front desk, getting people into canoes, getting people into kayak.
There are a lot of seasonal jobs associated with tourism in New Hampshire, but according to Janice, there aren't enough locals to fill them.
What is it, 2.4 unemployment rate we have in the area?
It's 2.9.
There aren't any bodies.
That's why for decades, businesses in the White Mountains have been turning to J-1 workers to fill the gap.
You know, I have some complete horror stories here in New Hampshire.
John Wilson is an immigration lawyer based in Concord.
For example, we'll have a hotel that cannot have people stay in their rooms at night because they don't have people to clean the rooms.
He says that the nationwide cap on more formal work visas, like the H-2B and H-2A, mean that more and more employers are turning to the J-1 in order to fill jobs.
If we don't allow foreign nationals to be able to come into the United States and fill these temporary positions and then mandate that they return home, if we don't allow that to occur, the U.S. employer is going to suffer. And they are suffering.
The way John says this, you can tell that he's used to combating a familiar argument, one more typically associated with illegal immigration.
Let me just dispel the chatter that one might hear that these people are taking the place of U.S. workers. It is just not true.
Maura Chappelle isn't buying it.
I have no problem with the J-1 students. It was their treatment.
Chappelle grew up in Massachusetts, but she's lived in the North Country for years.
I'm losing my accent. It was even stronger.
I met her during her shift at the old corner store in Jefferson, where she works full time. She wouldn't tell me how much she gets paid, but she says her boss doesn't skimp.
She pays above the regional average to keep us. But the truly, truly seasonal businesses want to make as much money with the least amount of cost. And the J-1s pay to come to the United States, They work for minimum wage. They're housed like slaves, borderline. And they get a tax write-off.
Maura points out businesses who hire J-1s sometimes pay less in taxes than they otherwise would. J-1s don't have to pay Medicare or Social Security payments, so companies that match those contributions can save thousands over the long haul. And they don't have to worry about paying unemployment at the end of the season, like they do when letting go of American workers.
I've known people that have said, oh, you know, I'm between jobs or I'm not making enough. And we'd be like, oh, why didn't you apply over at Mountain View? Why didn't you apply? Oh, I did. But they couldn't get in.
The Mountain View Grand in Whitefield is one of the other big resort hotels in the region. Maura knows firsthand about their hiring practices. She worked there herself in 2011. And most of her coworkers, she says, were J-1 visa holders.
I loved them. They called me work mom. I brought them healthy food. I took them to the store and made sure they had winter clothes because they're from India and or Brazil and like hot places, and they had no concept of cold weather. And they got trapped there. They were supposed to get rides around to do different things, and they didn't. Some of them get treated so poorly, but they can't quit, because if they quit, they have to go.
Management at the hotel didn't return repeated requests for comment. So I took a walk around the grounds of the Mountain View Grand to see if I could speak with any of the workers there myself. Behind the main hotel is a separate building, a pale yellow two-story house. Two white laminated signs are stapled to either side of the door. Dorm residents only, they say. The word only is underlined 7 times. Maybe 50 feet away near the tennis courts is another house, a ranch, where a few men are sitting on the porch.
Some are here for 3 months, some are for 1 year, and some are H2Bs out there, they're there for 6 months.
This is Raj. He's off duty, wearing a tank top and jeans. In fact, Raj had just finished his last day of work when we met. He was a cook at the hotel through the intern category of the J-1, which, unlike summer work travel, can last up to 18 months.
It was a pretty good experience. A lot of memories, as some bad ones, some good ones. I burned my hand over here.
He shows me his hand, which is speckled with pink scar tissue. He says he spilled hot oil while cooking in his dorm. Someone at the hotel brought him to the hospital for treatment.
I got the insurance. I was already paid the insurance for 1 year, so insurance company has taken care of all this thing.
Standing a few feet away from Raj is Osai from London. He's only been at the hotel for a month or so, and he's still learning the ropes.
I think the area is all right. It's in the, what do you call it? It's in the wild, basically, especially in Mountain View Grand. I'm from the city in London, so I'm not really used to this. So, like, everywhere's so remote.
The biggest downside to the program, they say, is the lack of transportation. Mountain View Grand is about 2 miles from downtown Whitefield, so students who want to go to the store are in for a good walk.
I often walk to Dollar General, like, maybe nearly every day, maybe 1 hour walk.
And for these two, who are both used to city living, the wilds of New Hampshire can be pretty intimidating.
Have you had a chance to go hiking?
No, not really.
If maybe a little exaggerated.
Bears, coyote, moose. That is the main thing. If we want to go for hiking, we have to watch our back.
Yeah.
We have one in the farm. That's not a rabbit, that's a rangoon. One rangoon is here.
Oh, raccoon?
Yeah.
Oh.
Used to move around here. Thrown the dozen trash can, tear the garbage, everything messed up.
There's another issue here, but the guys don't really want to discuss it. Like Maura said, they seem hesitant to complain. They don't want to get in trouble. Except Raj. He's heading home, so he's not afraid to spell it out.
During the summertime, we get to pay a lot because the work is a lot and the guest is, we have a lot of guests. And once the winter fall, then the business is very slow. We used to get 3 days off in a week, and hardly get 7 hours of work.
After I turned off the mic, I ran into a big group of students at the other dorm. And as long as I didn't use their names or voices, they were happy to complain. The hotel doesn't give them regular hours, they say. 1 week, they get overtime, and the next week, just 3 or 4 days of shifts. You might say, well, that's service work for you. But these J-1s are more or less stuck on the property. And if their hours don't match the job offer they were given in their home countries, that is a direct violation of State Department rules. Other students complained that if the program is supposed to be a cultural exchange, they should be allowed to have their American friends in the dorms. Instead of learning about American culture, they're spending more time amongst themselves, interacting with people from just about every other country but the one they're living in.
Can I get a picture for our web? No, it's cool. It's just the hangout.
I don't think.
No, if you don't want to, that's fine. That's cool.
Okay, I think this would be a good time for a break.
Yeah, okay.
So what's up after this?
Well, we just got a taste of what life is like for the J1s working at some of these big secluded hotels up in the Whites. Next up, we're looking at J1s who are working for smaller companies, mainly in the restaurant business.
That's when word of mouth continues.
I put biz on the script. I should stick with that, biz.
Mainly in the restaurant biz.
Mainly in the restaurant biz.
That's when word of mouth continues.
Biz.
Welcome back to Word of Mouth. Your questions answered, your state explored. I'm Jimmy Gutierrez here with our master storyteller for the day, Taylor Quimby.
Well, thank you very much.
Yeah, I thought you'd like that.
So, Jimmy, have you ever been to Storyland?
I haven't been to Storyland, but it sounds like maybe not the most exciting of times.
It's definitely not a place you go to as an adult without children.
Okay, all right.
You know, based off of lots of fairy tales and stuff like that, and there's one roller coaster, but it's not super big. So let's put it that way.
All right.
But right next to the park, so close that you can actually hear kids screaming on said roller coaster, is this big, super ugly Adirondack-style hotel. It's brown, totally defunct, and the pool area is so overgrown you can barely see it through all the grass. But if you walk around to the back, there's a good chance that you'll run into someone who is working at Storyland on a J-1 visa.
Had you heard of New Hampshire
before
you came here?
Oh, no. No.
So this is Debbie from Taiwan. She's majoring in the food and beverage industry, and she is working as a cook this year at Storyland.
So working at Storyland is a good thing.
If I want to practice my English, it's a good place. But if I want to learn about food and beverage, so.
So today on the show, we've been talking about J-1 visa workers here in New Hampshire, and specifically talking about students who are here on what's called summer work travel. And in 2015, Storyland employed about 45 summer work travelers, which makes it one of the biggest employers of J-1s in the state.
And where's everyone coming from?
They're coming from all over the world. Now, not surprisingly, Storyland can afford to figure out their own housing for these students. And that is why they bought this defunct hotel, the Linderhof, years ago. The J-1s are guaranteed a place to live. Storyland has a better chance of hiring more workers and keeping them there over the summer. So it's sort of a win-win.
But it's not really.
Well, you could look at these places, and it's kind of like living in a crappy motel.
Yeah, it sounds kind of disgusting.
But at the same time, this might be the better option, because a lot of smaller businesses, especially restaurants, are not able to provide their own housing for J-1 students. And that has created a totally separate set of issues. And that's what we're going to be talking about in this section of the show.
All right, let's get into it.
Okay. Say you're a fast food franchisee operating in the White Mountains. You've got a bunch of J-1 workers you want to hire for the summer, but where are they going to live?
A restaurant will say, I'm going to hire X number of kids. Can you house X number of kids? You know, and we'll make an agreement that way.
This is John Cliff. John has a number of properties in Bartlett and North Conway. I met him at one of his condos, part of the Linderhof Country Club, just across the street from Storyland. It was empty at the time. A nice two-bedroom Swiss chalet that he sometimes rents to J-1s.
They don't smoke, they don't drink, they don't party. They all work 2-3 jobs, and they're great kids. And, you know, you try and do the best to please everyone, but it's kind of hard.
In the hard-to-please camp is Bob Nelson. He's president of RWN Property Services, which maintains one of the condos where John Cliff has multiple units. Nelson has known Cliff for years and says he has a reputation for overcrowding his properties.
John has been known to put 14 to 17 people in two-bedroom units. I know this firsthand.
Nelson says that regardless of the ethics, the condos he manages are not designed to handle that many people. Too much waste can overload septic systems. Overused pipes can drip and lead to moldy drywall.
So the people down below suffer for not only all the noise that's above them, but there's physical damage being done.
One of John's units in particular has caused some tension. It's on a dead-end road called Wiley Court in North Conway, where many locals live side by side with apartments rented to J1 students.
Well, from what I understand, some of your properties, you've put a lot of people in fairly small apartments.
No, that's wrong. Okay, well, let's talk about the Wiley Court unit.
He says, despite having three bedrooms, he only had 10 to 12 people in the apartment.
But the bylaws say, you know, it's a two-bedroom, so I had to go from 10 down to 7.
But three separate people at Wiley Court told me that's not true. And in 2016, John was sued by the condo association.
Well, yeah, he had a court order from a judge that he had to reduce down to 7 individuals in that apartment.
I see. So how many did he have before then? So there was
around 18.
There was 18?
Mm-hmm.
This is David Pandora. He's the building inspector for the town of Conway. A few months ago, complaints from John's neighbors prompted Pandora to inspect John Cliff's unit at Wiley Court. Pandora found that the unit's smoke and carbon monoxide detectors weren't hardwired, as required by law. There were only 7 beds in the apartment, but Pandora says he also found a number of mattresses stored in a closet.
So, and they were stacked up. There was, you know, 7 or 8 or more of them in that room. So we made him remove the mattresses. It's probably his intentions was to, I mean, who knows, set them back up and reuse them after we'd left.
The town of Conway doesn't require inspections on residential houses. So unless there's a complaint, David Pandora has no reason to suspect there's an overcrowding problem.
These kids all ride bicycles, so there's no cars in the yard. The only way you can tell sometimes is if it's a bicycle rack out front with 20 bikes, you know there's a bunch of them.
Still, it's an issue that he's seen again and again. So what's the worst you've seen in terms of just overcrowding?
I had a house that there was probably between 22 and 25, all crammed into 3 rooms. And they weren't very big rooms. They were sleeping on the floor and in double bunks. And it was actually a fire in an ashtray that one of them had. It caught the blankets on fire, and it didn't do any major damage, and nobody got hurt. But I got called in by the fire department. So.
And these were all under J-1 visa?
Yes. Yep.
Wow. After the inspection on Wiley Court, the Conway Fire Department gave Cliff 30 days to fix the alarms and get rid of the extra mattresses. He's since complied with all the requirements. I visited the apartment myself a few times, but nobody ever came to the door. At another one of Cliff's units on the same street, a young woman from Moldova answered. When I told her I was a reporter, she told me she wasn't supposed to speak to me and politely shut the door. Cliff charges his J1s $110 per person per week. Even if there are only 7 people in a 2-bedroom unit, that's more than $3,000 per month. But John says he's not making as much money as people think he is. Renting to J1s in the summer often means keeping the apartment empty during other parts of the year.
We have the issue where someone will say, oh, well, I want 40 beds. Can you provide that? Yeah, I can provide it. And then they'll call you back and say, oh, well, only 20 are coming, and 10 show up. You know? Then you got to eat that note. You know? I wish some of the locals would be more appreciative, you know, but they just look for something to complain about. Everyone knows everyone's business. Oh, you're making money. You know, I still got bills to pay, and I'm holding it for them, you know, so they just need something to complain about.
I was able to get into one of John Cliff's rental properties, the house full of Dunkin' Donuts employees that we heard at the beginning of the story. Remember Veronica? I asked her about her landlord, and she couldn't even remember his name.
John, Josh, James, Joshua.
That's a lot of J's.
In fact, all the students knew about John Cliff was how much they owed him.
He came once a week, and he took our money.
John bought this 3-bedroom house from the Department of Transportation in April of 2017. There's a sign out front that says residence only. An old trailer sits in the tall grass on the front lawn. A half dozen bikes are parked out front. It's been humid for days, and the inside smells strongly of mildew. There are only 8 people living here, so it's no more packed than some college frat houses, though Fernando told me there were supposed to be 15 students in total.
Has everything been okay with the apartment?
Yeah, it's okay.
Fernando, Veronica, and Susanna, none of them had ever had a job before coming to North Conway. Dunkin' Donuts is their very first. And whether they're talking about their job or the house they live in, they're just not quick to complain. They'll put up with issues that American kids, or even American adults, would not. And that is exactly the point.
What I find is that our workers today don't know how to work.
That's Janice Crawford again, of the Mount Washington Valley of Commerce.
They have high expectations of what it should be and how much you should pay me, and I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to do it unless you meet all my demands.
John Cliff and others I spoke to for this story made similar observations, that relative to American students, J-1s have lower expectations, and they're therefore happy with less.
You know, some of my kids that I have that are renting from me, the J-1s, are working 2-3 jobs. They'd take a fourth if they could, because it's a lot better here than in their country. What they're making in a week's pay, they don't make in a month. Okay? One kid gave me, he goes, John, here's a $50 bill in my country, and it's only worth pennies here in the States. I said, what do you mean? He says, that's the change of the value to the dollar. So, you know, he's really excited to be working here.
And that may be true for some, but there are J-1 students from just about every country and every background imaginable. And as it turns out, Fernando and many others will go home empty-handed.
So you're not going to make any money either?
No. it's not going to... How can I say this?
First goal?
No, it's not my first goal, yes. And it's not going to be all I spent to come here.
Coming to the U.S. on a J-1 visa can cost a lot of money. All in all, students can wind up spending $3,000, $4,000, even $5,000 in order to get here.
Yes, the program costs like $1,000, the flight ticket another $1,000, yeah. And the passport visa $3,000 in total. Yeah.
Fernando says he and many other Romanian students even take out loans in order to pay their J-1 fees.
I have a friend who wanted to come and they didn't approve her loan, and he already paid half of the money for the U.S. and just lost it.
It's easy to look at this program and find examples that do not feel like they live up to the cultural mission of the J-1 visa. But I'm going to come out and state the obvious question. Is this exploitation?
It's worth it, yes. I would change the housing because it's a little bit far away from the main street, from the work. But I like the people who live here, so it's okay.
Whether it's because they don't want to get in trouble or because they're genuinely having a great time, Fernando and the others on the Duncan's crew are not quick to complain. And as long as that's the case, the exploitation conversation seems to be one that nobody really wants to have. But according to Kathleen Karen, who does, this is a big problem. J-1, she says, are vulnerable because there are so few protections afforded them.
The problem with the J-1 program is it relies on the benevolence of the employer.
Kathleen is executive director of Justice in Motion, a group that advocates for migrant workers.
So if you're going to have a good employer, it's going to be a fine experience. The problem is, it's just that's not guaranteed to happen because of the structure.
When she says the structure, what she means is the lack of direct oversight.
So we look at 4-5 categories of the J-1s that we are concerned about. So that's au pairs, the nannies, camp counselors, summer work travel, and then there's another category that are often put together, which are interns and trainees. The workers that come under those categories, unfortunately, many, many employers are using J-1 just because it's the easier visa to get. If you want to bring in a worker and exploit them and pay very low wages, the chances of you getting caught are very, very low.
Over the years, a few high-profile cases of J-1 exploitation have made national news. In 2011, hundreds of J-1 workers and local labor organizers protested conditions at a factory where students were packaging Hershey's chocolate for low wages and disproportionate housing costs.
A loud protest, lots of police, and in the end, 3 people arrested as dozens of foreign...
Afterwards, the State Department revised J-1 statutes and prohibited a number of industries from employing J-1s in the future. In 2013, 15 J-1 employees at a Pennsylvania McDonald's franchise went on strike. They were being housed in the franchisee's basement, 8 people to a room, and docked nearly all of their pay in order to cover rent. Some were given just a few hours a week. Others were forced to work 25-hour shifts with no overtime pay. After the students protested, the federal government stepped in again. The McDonald's franchise owner was fined $211,000 by the Department of Labor. In rare cases, exploitation has been even more extreme.
Two girls from Ukraine offered to, you know, work at a yoga studio in Miami, and there is no yoga studio in Miami, and they're pushed into sex trafficking and end up being a criminal conviction. Is this what we want as a cultural exchange for young foreigners coming to the United States? I mean, I don't think so. It's embarrassing, it's wrong, it's exploitative, and we need to change the system.
In each of these cases, it's clear that the system had failed. The State Department shunted responsibility to the sponsors. The sponsors shunted responsibility to the employers. And some of those employers abused the privileges afforded them. In these cases, not only was there no cultural exchange, work conditions for J-1s didn't even meet legal standards. The New Hampshire-based GeoVisions, who declined to be interviewed, was the sponsor that oversaw the McDonald's students who protested in 2015. GeoVisions was reprimanded by the State Department for failing to ensure the safety of their J-1s, and the overall number of students they were allowed to work with was reduced by 15%. Heather Herring no longer works for GeoVisions, and she wasn't there when the scandal happened. But she says that the company stepped up the reporting and oversight after the McDonald's incident. So you came in after they got their wrist slapped for the 2011 thingamajig.
I did. That was like just happening, yes. And that, you know, was a big concern. And okay, instead of asking 15 questions, we're asking 50 questions. So it definitely got laborious to verify a job offer, but for good reason, because we don't want situations like, you know, for students to be in trouble. Now, sometimes students get themselves in their own trouble because they're 20 years old and they get drunk or they steal something from Walmart or they end up in jail for, you know, a real reason. And that, you know, we have to handle that very delicately as well. You know, the student is not, you know, adhering to the rules of the program and, you know, has been fired from their job or is in legal trouble and we need to make sure they get home, you know, and their programs.
Phil Simon of the Council for International Educational Exchange told me there are some 350 total employees working at the company's Portland headquarters. In total, those employees work with about 20,000 summer work travel students every year. If summer work travel is 20,000, I mean, that's like, you know, 3-4 check-ins for each one. That's a lot of check-ins.
It's a lot of check-ins. A lot of different languages we need to cover. So yeah, it's a pretty complex program. But we've been doing it for 50 years, so we've got a lot of experience and know what we're doing.
The program is not perfect, but it is. I believe in it. I thought it was a good idea.
On the side of the main drag in North Conway, just a few minutes from shopping outlets and dozens of restaurants, is the newest housing option for J-1 visa holders.
I know this sounds ridiculous, but give me a tour of the room. Yeah.
Okay. This is Christian with a K. He looks at me funny when I ask for a tour, then gestures with one hand.
That's pretty much all of the room. Like this, you can call it a kitchen area. You know, we have a fridge, a microwave, TV, have a table, two chairs for four people.
Christian is from Bulgaria. He's working at Applebee's this summer and living at the Work and Travel Lodge, an old motel that this spring was converted into housing specifically for J-1s.
If you're a J-1 visa holder on a work and travel program, and you're looking for a home away from home in the North Conway, New Hampshire area, then we have the perfect spot for you.
In addition to blocks of dorm-style rooms, there's a community center with a kitchen, musical instruments, and video games. Owner George Wu offers activities too, things like guided hiking trips and kayaking lessons. Students can sign up for a price.
He's in it to make money, don't get me wrong, but he is doing it right.
Bob Nelson of RNC Properties has known George for years. In fact, he's also been renting to J-1s in the same condo association as John Cliff.
We also limit the number of students per room, so you are assured of space and privacy. Choose to stay in our four-bed dorm and suite with a private...
But for Christian, the Work and Travel Lodge is a step up. This is his second time coming to the U.S. on a J-1 visa. 2 years ago, he spent a summer lifeguarding in Virginia.
The housing wasn't what I expected. It was like an apartment with only mattresses on the floor, and that's it.
Yeah. And was it you and how many other people?
We were five people in the apartment and one bedroom. Yeah, we have drawers here.
Some drawers. Mirror, bathroom.
Yeah, that's the bedroom.
Space might be tight at the work and travel lodge, cool, but at least it's up to code.
Cool. Earplugs, important.
Oh, yeah.
And as far as Christian's time in America goes, who knows? This might be a more accurate cultural experience than we'd ever care to admit. Today's show was produced by me, Taylor Quimby. Our staff includes Jimmy Gutierrez, Hannah McCarthy, Justine Paradise, and Ben Henry. Erica Janik is our executive producer. Maureen McMurray is director of Getting Sick at Work Conferences. Special thanks to Victoria Laracy and Ellen Grimm. To see a list of New Hampshire's biggest J1 employers and a map that shows where J1s are placed around the state, go to wordofmouthradio.org. Music in this show from Blue Dot Sessions, Ari De Niro, and Poddington Bear. Word of Mouth is a production of New Hampshire Public Radio. Thank you.